And I have up here a picture of my colleague James Ballington. Jim's a retired breeder at North Carolina State University. And he's the person who actually collected this germplasm originally. He collected it probably more than 15 years ago now down in Colombia. But this species, Vaccinium crimpidendrum, is also found in a number of places in Latin America. It's found in Colombia, Venezuela, Guyana, Jamaica. And Jim had regularly given me various bits of germplasm, and I always asked him, I said, Jim, what are we going to do with it? What's the value of this germplasm? And his one particular comment about Vaccinium crimpidendrum was that it seemed to flower up in the high altitude mountainous areas at times when they still had frost. So he believed it had some sort of resistance to frost, some sort of cold hardiness, although certainly we didn't know anything about the exact mechanism of it. Now, some of the other interesting things about it. It has a very high flower number and kind of an elongated floral structure, so it has the potential, I think, to bear a lot of fruit. When it blooms, at least under our conditions, it's a very concentrated blooming. It blooms and would potentially pollinate over a matter of a few days. So again, if you were transferring this to conventional germplasm, you'd have potentially something that might all ripen at one time. It also has this monopodial type structure that you can see in the photograph there. That picture was taken out at Corvallis at the repository. And I think, again, that's where the name crimpidendrum comes from. It can get a little bit tree-like. So all these things are potentially mechanical harvest traits. This is just another picture of it, just to give you a little feel. This is one of the hybrids that we produced of crimpidendrum with diploid corymbosum. And when I look at those emerging buds, to me they remind me almost of catkins more than a typical sort of blueberry bud. But they come out like that. They emerge very quickly. Oftentimes have somewhere in the range of 16 or 18 flowers per bud. So they're very prolific. And what I'd like to show you here is just some of the early attempts I made at crossing these. At the time Jim collected these, I asked what they were, what ploidy they were, and he said, well, they're probably diploids. So we proceeded with that concept. We crossed them to diploid aleatii, we crossed them to diploid corymbosum, and in fairness, I didn't list everything on here. We had 11 different diploid parents that we crossed to. These were the major ones. There were six corymbosum parents. There were two or three aleatii parents, and then there was one boreali, one darrowi, and a few other mixed diploid hybrids. But when we did this, one of the first hybrids we got was one that was ultimately labeled US906. It wasn't anything special in a hybrid. It was obviously a hybrid, but when it finally got to a large enough size that it flowered, it had very, very low fertility. But still, with the idea that we would move this along, I tried crossing it to tetraploid corymbosum. Again, it didn't work with any great success, but it produced another hybrid called US1000, we labeled US1038. Now, US1038 was actually kind of nice. It looked a lot like what I would call southern highbush in terms of both its stature and its general plant structure. US1038 had moderate fertility. We tried one more cross to tetraploid highbush and produced some of the one hybrid listed there with blue crop. When I looked at this germplasm, though, what I found is I said, I have two generations here, none of them are very fertile. As a fruit crop that we wanted would potentially intergress and harvest, it's not going to do me a lot of good if I have low fertility. That one back cross to blue crop that gave me 1371 gave me a hybrid, but it had a terrible fruit scar. So I kind of lost interest in this germplasm, and a lot of it got set aside. Now, at some point later, US1038 also got crossed to hexaploid rabbiti, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in another slide or two. But as part of a different project, we began doing some flow cytometry on different hybrids we had. And so I would pick up things that were out of the greenhouse, and I said to myself, we ought to test some of these. They have low fertility. Let's see what they really are. Well, what we found out is that when we tested a few of these hybrids, they were triploids. And that in itself surprised me. Triploids are really not very common in blueberry and in most species. If you don't find triploids because of something called a triploid block. At the same time we did some of this testing, we found out that Crimbodendron, our original parent, was tetraploid. So crossing tetraploids by diploid corymbosum, triploidy is what you would expect as a result, but because of triploid block that's very strong in blueberries, you don't hardly expect to find any. And to just go back and quote, Jim Ballington had originally done some pollinations of mainline germplasm crossing tetraploids and diploids. He did 3,300 crosses. He got 4 triploids. Paul Irene, who's in the audience here and who talked about triploids a little bit this morning, in one of their publications they mentioned they did 7,000 pollinations of tetraploids and diploids and got 3 triploids out of it. So very, very low frequency. It's an uphill battle. After we found the first 5 triploids that we had, we decided that we would go look more methodically through the populations that we had. We didn't test everything, but we tried to test a sample out of each family group. Right now we have 49 triploids that we found. So out of what were probably 100 to 150 pollinations that we did originally, we have 50 some triploids. So it's really quite an unusual situation. All right, just to decipher what happened in those crosses, same thing we saw before, but now we have ploidies attached to these. Tetraploid Crimbodendron by diploid Aleatii. US 906 was a triploid, and it had low fertility. That's not surprising. We managed to cross that to Duke with an unreduced gamete coming from US 906, and we got a pentaploid. And parenthetically, behind those there, I've listed what percent or what proportion of Vaccinium Corymbodendron germplasm is left in each of those hybrids. The pentaploid hybrid had only moderate fertility. That's not surprising if you have a pentaploid. You cross it to a tetraploid, and you get things that are close to being tetraploid hybrids. But at each one of these steps, you're reducing your Corymbodendron germplasm level, and some of these characteristics you're looking for are becoming more and more diluted as you're coming back to a standard type and trying to restore fertility. And again, a pentaploid is not surprising. You can cross that to a hexaploid, and you get things that are close to hexaploid hybrids, but again, you've diluted your Crimbodendron quite a bit. So coming back to this germplasm, these many years later, like I say, I originally got this germplasm, the first of these crosses, probably more than 15 years ago now. As we found out that these were triploids, one of the things I said is that we can begin to understand how to operate with these, and what we should do is try and actually limit our dilution. So one of the things I suggested to myself is that we would try and self US 1038, that pentaploid. More than 200 crosses we did this last spring, absolutely no take whatsoever. You can take some of the old back crosses to tetraploids and cross them to 1038 one more time. You have variable results, but low. And your Vaccinium Crimbodendron is once again diluted. But I suggested to myself that perhaps the thing that would make most sense, now that we know we have triploids in the original crosses, that they are likely to be producing some level of unreduced gametes, we can cross those with a hexaploid, come up with something that has a balanced ploidy level, and not have diluted our germplasm much more than any of these other crosses. This is just to give you a little feel of what some of these hybrids look like. This is a Crimbodendron by Aleatii. It flowers quite prolifically. You can pollinate all of those, and over a matter of a few weeks, you'll see more and more of the flower buds drop off. That final picture there is something a little bit short of them being ripened. Ultimately, they'll turn blue. You can open them up. They might have one seed in them, but not every one of them would necessarily have a seed. So we've done a lot of these crosses of tetraploids by diploids, gotten all these unusual triploids, but there's a further paradox with using Vaccinium Crimbodendron. We have took, and just one of the crosses we did, we crossed the Crimbodendron with some lingonberry, which is also diploid. By logic, you would say you should get a triploid out of that, but we didn't. We got two seedlings, and when we finally did the flow cytometry on this plant, it turned out to be a tetraploid. which again is, it goes kind of counterintuitive. All these other ones turned out to be triploids, crossing tetraploids by diploid. We crossed a tetraploid by a diploid, and now we got another tetraploid. But it's a great plant. It's very fertile. It has intermediate morphology. You can easily self it and produce many more offspring. So, looking at the triploids, what's the real possibility here? Well, one is that the crimpidendron simply has no triploid block. And that would be a simple explanation to explain most of these, but it doesn't explain that tetraploid hybrid. So I invoke something that goes back some 30 years. It goes back to what I worked on when I was working on potatoes as a graduate student. And in potatoes, we have a system that's called endosperm balance number. And what endosperm balance number says is that interspecific hybridization success is dependent on balancing maternal and paternal genomic strengths regardless of resultant offspring ploidy. And in potato germplasm, the classic example is a high mountain species, Solana macaulay, which is tetraploid. You can cross it with a diploid lowland species called Solanum chapoense, and you get nothing but triploids. And the logic behind this, when you operate in the endosperm balance number system, you start out with your mainline germplasm and you say your balance number is the same as your ploidy number. And for a cross to succeed, the two parents must have matching numbers. So under the system, which it's a construct, you assign these numbers, but Solana macaulay becomes 4X2EBN. You can cross it with chapoense, which is 2X2EBN, and you get triploids that are 3X2EBN. In potatoes, they also found diploid species that have these basically disjunct numbers, where the balance number is lower than the actual ploidy number. And again, as long as you match that, the crosses will work. So the parallel hypothesis is for this germplasm is that our vaccinium species is basically a 4X2EBN number species. Eleatii and corymbosum, again, they're mainline, so we have them ploidy number matching their balance number. And our oddball tetraploid hybrid, it would suggest that lingonberry is a 2X1EBN hybrid. The great thing about this is a testable hypothesis. And what we're doing right now are all the things that would be required to really kind of prove this. We're crossing the crimpidendron with these parents again. Both not only the diploids we had before, but now tetraploids. Crimpidendron doesn't flower very well for us, so this is kind of an uphill battle, but we've done a few of these this year. We can take our triploids and again cross them to either tetraploids or hexaploids. You would expect the one cross using unreduced gametes on the female side to work better to a tetraploid than it would to a hexaploid, and you should be able to see differences in the seed. The question is which hybrids might be better, because one is going to have it would be a pentaploid result, one will be a hexaploid. And the hexaploid might actually be more fertile. And we're repeating the crimpidendron by lingonberry hybrids again. Just in closing, we're continuing to pursue this. And to really assign these numbers, you need to look at cross results much more deeply, I think, than most of us usually do. You need to do crosses at different ploidy levels. You need to do reciprocals if possible. You need to look very closely at seed size, quantity, and quality. And you need the offspring ploidy determinations. When I worked on my graduate thesis, we looked at the genes controlling it. We found three genes, and we found EBN maybe a non-integral value. And EBN isn't necessarily a speciation mechanism, but it certainly enforces speciation, along with things like styler incompatibilities and male sterilities. And so I consider it sort of a gatekeeper for this tertiary germplasm pool. And that's it. And I'm afraid I've run to my limit too, so if you have any questions, we'll save them for after a while.